This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Frida Liu. It's Tech Talk. Why wait for the new year to improve yourself? Reckons Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. If you're currently a leaf, use your time off to jumpstart your brain and make 2017 great again. So is that your slogan for 2017?
It is, bigly. 2016 has been an absolute horror show of a year, and I'm not just talking about, you know, Trumpy. If any listeners have been following my Starmageddon posts this year, it's like someone evil opened a box of, I don't know, celebrity Jaffa cakes and scattered them to the wind. It's been absolutely awful. So I think we all owe it to ourselves to make 2017 great again, no matter who or what tries to get in the way. And without getting too kind of new agey about it, I think the way to make the year great is to start with ourselves. If we can make ourselves better people, maybe we won't be able to change the world, but, you know, we can improve the little bits of it that we inhabit and we touch.
Okay, so why not wait until the new year and make it part of the traditional new year resolutions?
Well, partly because I think this should be biglier than that. The word is so versatile. I'm surprised. Before Donald Trump, did we just grunt to each other before he came along with all the best words? No, one of the reasons I think we should do this now is because so many people seem to be on leave right now, and a lot of people are staying at home rather than going away. So I thought, you know, why not take advantage of that time to do a bit of soul searching and see if you can come up with a better you for 2017.
This sounds like an episode of Razor Game.
I know.
Now, are we talking about mindfulness, meditation, things like that?
Not at all, although there's no reason not to do that stuff if it works for you. I'm looking at this in more of a kind of life hacking way by recognizing some of the ways that our brains and our bodies are wired to make 2017 worse again, and hijacking those and seeing if we can change the responses, even if just a little bit. So one of the examples, I think a few months ago we talked about the ways that racism may be coded into our brains. You know, even the most liberal of us tend to favor people who look like us over people who look different. And in some people that manifests itself as out and out racism, but most of us are on that same spectrum, whether to a greater or a lesser degree. And we all have this tendency to dehumanize other groups, whether it's homeless people, bankers, or clowns. And that's something that has developed from our survival mechanism from back when we were hunter-gatherers. You know, someone who didn't look like you was probably from another group or tribe and either wanted you to club you to death or use you to expand their gene pool.
So if we're talking about coded responses, how easy are they to break?
Well, when you look at the news at the moment, you might think it's something that humanity will never get right or recover from. Overcoming it is actually working with those preconceptions in the brain. So if we accept that our brains are hardwired to create these kind of them and us situations, then we have to work on moving people from the them box and into the us box. And that's actually a lot easier than it sounds. Susan Fiske at the University of Princeton has found that fear of the other could be reduced very simply by getting test subjects to think about what foods someone from a group they feared might like. And brain scans showed an immediate reduction in the fear centers of the brain. It's very, very interesting, very instant, because the exercise had helped to humanize and turn that other group into individuals.
Food. Okay, yeah. Which suggests that someone can be trapped by their own ego.
Well, again, I mean, the ego is something that we have for a reason, and it turns out that we all tend to think more highly of ourselves than other people think of us. And, you know, anyone who doesn't think highly of themselves is obviously a loser. No, of course, they're not. They might just be frighteningly self-aware. The ego is something that protects us. It lets us bluff our way through life. It helps us to find jobs. It helps us to find friends, a mate. It helps us to carry on when things aren't going so well because, you know, you're so damn good-looking and intelligent. You deserve success. And, you know, we all know people who have a very high opinion of themselves and at the same time are not self-aware. And if you're one of those people, then your path to salvation is going to be long, hard, and probably full of pain. And I do hope that you feel every bump along the way, not out of any sense of, you know, schadenfreude, but it's for your own good. And apparently, men are more likely to be boastful and blowhardy than women. Who would have imagined it? A University of Illinois study published this year defines this as the frog prince delusion.
Okay.
So guys are aware that other people see them as the frog, but continue to believe that everyone else is wrong and they're actually the prince, hence the frog prince delusion. And of course, I know that doesn't apply to anyone here at BFM. Certainly it doesn't apply to me because everyone knows I'm the prince.
That's the condition, but you haven't explained how to make it better.
Well, according to my friends at New Scientist, this what they call the bias blind spot is very common. So you can see it very clearly in people who follow kind of crazy conspiracy theories, like the one that says I live in a house made out of gold bricks, which is, you know, it's silly. My house is made out of platinum. It's shinier and lighter and it offsets my skin color a lot better. But it is something that we are all guilty of at some point or another. It's the idea that the things that we perceive are the objective reality and that what everyone else sees is the delusion. Again, no one at BFM has this disease, I'm sure. And overcoming it partly is about recognizing that as a problem. Dispute resolution techniques can help. Research at City University in London suggests trying to see a conflict from the opposing position. So a bit like those debates where you argue and reason for something that you don't necessarily believe in. And at the same point, the same research points out that when we make decisions when we're angry or emotional, then it tends to reinforce that blind spot bias and it sends you further down the rabbit hole. So it can be as simple as taking a step back. Try and see things from the other person's point of view and you might actually come to the incredible realization that you're not me and you were just wrong.
What about the more traditional resolution fare, like getting fitter, being kinder, giving more money to...
Yes, you see how I've subtly introduced that message? If I can get you to say that every week, then that subliminal push is going to make our listeners want to shower me with money. We talked about this at the beginning of the year in a similar context. We were talking about breaking bad habits more specifically because a lot of our behavior, even our social behavior, is automated by the brain. So one of the reasons a self-driving car needs so many sensors and cameras and gizmos to do what our brains do every time we get in a car is because we can shuffle a lot of the process tasks off to automated parts of the brain, and that frees up our processing resources for other tasks. So I know that sounds very kind of computer nerdy, but it's actually computers behaving like our brains rather than the other way around. It might be easier to think of it as what people often call muscle memory, but is actually social conditioning. And it's not about just how to, you know, change gear in the car or do these mechanical tasks. It's actually about how we behave in certain situations. So whereas earlier this year we talked about breaking bad habits by consciously rejecting these default presets, introducing and reinforcing new habits can be about working with this automatic programming and making it function for the positive. One of the things that people often do in this era of the individual is they'll say, well, this is me, this is how I behave, take it or leave it. Yet research tends to show that we behave very differently to this. We respond to our environment. In a shop, we behave like a shopper. In a restaurant, we behave largely like everyone else. We follow these social cues. So another example, if you want to start eating healthily, Wendy Wood at University of Southern California suggests going to places that only have healthy food. Now, that might sound obvious, but if you agree to meet colleagues at a burger joint for lunch, sure, there's a salad on the menu, but you're going to find the temptation to go for the high-fat option very difficult to overcome because your automatic behavior in a burger joint is to order the burger and fries. Having a salad there feels very weird. But if you go to a place that only serves salad, then eating a salad becomes the natural choice for you. And Val Curtis at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine suggests a similar course of action. For example, say you've been going to the gym or you've been running as part of your effort to get fit, but you just don't feel like it today. And that kind of thing, you know, it happens to all of us. Yeah. Curtis suggests that you get changed into your gym gear anyway. In many cases, the research suggests that the automatic behavior kicks in. You associate the clothes with exercise, so once you put them on, it overcomes your desire to sit on the couch, and you're no longer wearing your couch clothes. So instead, you head out for a run or a training session.
Because I do that as well. If I, because I do my outdoor exercise. It's raining, but I'm a member of the gym. So I said, okay, I'm ready dressed, so I'll go to the gym.
Exactly.
And at that point, you know, I'm going to a salad bar. I mean, when I go home, it's mummy mode.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
You know, so it's, and then just kind of funny behavior. But even, you know, to your earlier point about how this bias about how your emotion intelligence goes down when you're angry. So I'm conscious that when I am angry, I'm just going to use another word, that's angry, okay, no, there is no intelligent thinking that's going to happen.
No, there isn't. And again, it, like I said, it is all about just recognizing these things, being aware of them. That's why a lot of these tasks are not that difficult to overcome. It just needs that element of self-awareness to take yourself out of the default mode and put yourself in a new position.
Let's have that one last message while we've got you in an inspiring mood.
Easy. Just feel better about yourself. You don't often get me saying things like this, right?
No.
So one of the things that people often say to me is that they don't really, they really don't understand things like physics. And for sure, you know, most of us have very little idea how a particle accelerator works or how the density and mass of a black hole pulls in and traps surrounding matter. And I don't either, because it's really complicated. But all of you who tell me you're bad at physics, you're actually wrong. Everybody is.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.